Welcome to the Kings Island Central Podcast. KICentral.com is Kings Island's ultimate fan site. Now, here is your host, Robbie Zerhuizen.
Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Zerhuizen. I am a moderator here on Kings Island Central by the username of CoastersRZ. And welcome to the Kings Island Central Podcast, episode number one, the 2017 year in review. Along with me, I have Brad Perdue.
Hello, how's it going, guys?
And Matt Middleton.
Hey.
So before we get into the meat of the podcast, I just want to give you a quick background on me. I am an architect by trade, and I have been going to Kings Island since I was 6 months old. And I have been on KIC since 2003, I think. And I have been a season pass holder to Kings Island since 1998. So, Brad, how long have you been going to Kings Island?
I've been going since I was a little kid with my parents. We'd take a trip once a year over to Kings Island. That was, you know, the exciting part of our summer. I actually grew up a lot at Indiana Beach since I am from Indianapolis. Indiana Beach is about an hour and a half away from my house, whereas Kings Island's 2 hours. And we used to go up to Indiana Beach quite a bit. So that was really the park that really got me into coasters and being an enthusiast. So we would go up there probably 4 or 5 times a summer and enjoy Indiana Beach, but we'd also take one trip over to Kings Island as well once a summer. And that's kind of how I got started into becoming an enthusiast and a park enthusiast.
Okay. And what about you, Matthew?
My family always went to Kings Island every year from as far back as I can remember. I believe my first visit was 1990, although the only memory I have of that visit is looking at photos. I started going as an adult in 2012, and I got involved with KIC a couple of years before that in 2010. So it took me a while to start being a regular visitor to the park. But I've been a fan of amusement parks for about as long as I can remember.
Yeah, I became a member of KIC back in 2009. I was trying to figure out what they were doing in the old Swan Lake area at Kings Island with all the signs up, and ran across Kings Island Central searching for what, you know, was going to be in that area and what they were building, and became a member and been there ever since.
Yeah, for me, I started reading the site after the Paramount sale to Cedar Fair. That really got my interest in reading about what would happen to the park with Cedar Fair owning it. So read it for a few years, eventually signed up, started posting, and became a moderator.
And here we are entering the 12th year that Cedar Fair is in the park.
Yes.
Doesn't seem like it's been that long, does it?
No.
Seems like it's about 5 years or so, but time flies.
Yes, it does. So obviously the big new addition in 2017 was Mystic Timbers, a great Coasters International wooden coaster. And I think that this ride is a perfect ride for Kings Island because it's not too intense, but it's a fun ride.
Yeah, I think it's a good mixture of intense ride and family ride. Being a person with 3 kids and being an enthusiast, I look at it in 2 different ways here. When I take my family, my kids love it. You know, I got a 12-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old. Obviously, a 3-year-old can't ride it yet. But we do the parent swap and come up, and, you know, 2 of us ride, then the other 2 can ride after that. And, you know, the 7-year-old and the 12-year-old absolutely loves it, and the 12-year-old loves Banshee and Diamondback as well, but he also loves Mystic Timbers, and having that middle ground coaster that is more of a family but thrill coaster, in my opinion, at the park is definitely something that I feel was a great asset to the park.
It definitely is a great addition. Fills the hole in the lineup very well. The Airtime Hills make it a good experience for someone who's looking for thrills, but it's also very smooth, and the height is not as extreme as Diamondback, so it is great for the enthusiasts who are just getting started as well. So all around, I thought it was a very great ride.
Well, I think it's also, you know, you get on it, and it's not intimidating looking at all when you walk up to it. You know, you got the theming and the queue and all, but looking at it from a seven-year-old aspect, you know, a family aspect, oh, this looks like a fun ride. You get on, it's nonstop thrills. As soon as you get on the lift hill, you hear the music and the going, not going into the shed, theming and talking up the lift hill. Then it's nonstop riding all the way back up to the final brake run. I mean, it's nonstop action. I'm riding with my kids, and they're laughing and giggling the whole time on that ride. You know, there's no stopping. It's however many minutes it is, a minute and 30 seconds, I think, of nonstop fun and giggles for my family. I don't know about you guys, but even as an enthusiast, I feel the same way. It's nonstop fun all the way to the brake run.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you get off that lift hill, you're going until you hit the brakes at the end. There's no slowing down.
And there's elements the whole way through. There's no kind of like stale moments in that ride at all. It's constant. You're curving, you're out of your seat or something all the way through.
Yeah. Have either of you been on any other Great Coasters International rides?
Yes. I've been on Evel Knievel at Six Flags St. Louis and Thunderhead at Dollywood.
I have yet to ride another GCI, so that was my first experience with the GCI.
I've been on Evel Knievel at Six Flags St. Louis, the GCI out at Six Flags Magic Mountain, Thunderhead, and the ones at Hershey Park.
And in a way, I'm kind of glad I hadn't, because I didn't have any expectations when I got on the ride. You know, I didn't experience any other GCI, so I didn't know what to expect other than people saying they're great. You know, that was my only expectation, and it delivered.
Yeah, I knew Thunderhead was the first GCI I went on, and I really enjoyed it. And I was hoping that Kings Island would one day get one. And now that we got one, I'm really excited to have one 25 minutes from my house.
2 hours.
About hour 45 here. It's definitely ranks up there with the other GCIs. I haven't ridden the others enough to definitively name my favorite, but Mystic Timbers is definitely one of the better ones.
When the ride was announced, it was mentioned that they wanted to get the Golden Ticket Award for Best New Attraction, because when Diamondback opened, Prowler at Worlds of Fun won the Golden Ticket Award that year. And I actually have been on Prowler, and I think Mystic Timbers is far superior to Prowler.
Really?
Yes.
So let's talk about Prowler and Diamondback. Which one would you have given the golden ticket to?
When I rode Prowler, it was a couple years after it opened. It was probably 2015 when I rode it.
Okay.
So it had been 6 years after it opened. I would have given it to Diamondback based on the experience of riding Prowler.
Gotcha. What about you, Matthew?
Diamondback versus Prowler?
Yes.
Well, I have not been in Prowler. I do want to go on that because it has a the more of a twister layout versus the out and back of Mystic Timbers. But I have not ridden it, so it's wouldn't really be fair for me to judge. But I think the edge would probably go to Diamondback.
Gotcha.
So what do you think about the theming and how Mystic Timbers fits into Rivertown?
I personally think it fits in really well. I like the Miami River Lumber Company theme with the sawmill. And it starts as soon as you start to enter the queue. You know, you got the truck there. You got, you know, don't come in the line, exit the area over the speakers. And, you know, you got the TVs. As you're going through the queue, they're trying to figure out what's going on out there. The queue house and station. Then it starts out going up the lift hill and telling you to get out of the shed. And don't go in the shed. So theming-wise, I think it's one of the best ones in the park. They've definitely put a lot of thought into it. Starting, you know, at the start of the queue all the way to coming into the station at the very end after you hit the shed. So I personally love the theming of this ride. I think they knocked that out of the park as well with, you know, having theming from start to finish.
And I would say it's not just the theming, but they kind of created a storyline to go with
it. Right. Exactly. Which I totally appreciate. You know, you got a story behind it. You got signage in the queue house, queue line areas. If you're looking around, you got the TVs to kind of give you an idea. But you kind of got to know the backstory. That would be my only criticism of the whole what's in the shed and the story they're putting off in the queue is, if you're a general public person who's walking into the queue, you're really not sure what they're talking about. You know, I feel like there should be a little more details about the backstory of what you're getting into when you walk into the queue for that story to unfold correctly.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. For the enthusiasts who fans of the park who want to know every detail, would be nice to have that sort of signage to give the backstory. Although a general public entering the park, they enter the line and see that there's something mysterious in the shed, and that's mainly what they need to know. Though for people who visit dozens of times a year, the backstory becomes more and more interesting.
I think Right. That's kind of what Flight of Fear does well with the pre-show when there's a line, is it kind of explains the whole story behind Flight of Fear. Whereas Mystic Timbers doesn't really have a pre-show like that that kind of explains some of the backstory.
Right, and being there on the opening day and media preview day, you know, the person, the company who did the What's in the Shed and all that got up there and explained it, and we've written some of that out on Kings Island Central's website. In the Mystic Timbers threads, you can go back and look at that. But, you know, they explained the story a little bit more. And, you know, I think a lot of people were kind of going, okay. And shaking their head up and down going, okay, that makes a lot more sense. But if you're someone who doesn't get much of that backstory, you may be a little confused if you're trying to figure it out just in the queue. And trying to figure out what's in the shed. Okay, how does that relate to us getting in a truck and the videos in the queue and all that? I wish there was something a little bit more to tie it all together for people to understand it. That would be my only criticism, but overall, the theming and the backstory is very cool.
I would agree. What do you think of the whole What's in the Shed?
Boy, I tell you what. There was a lot of talk about it was hyped up a bunch. And the park knows what they're doing when it comes to marketing the hashtag What's in the Shed. But they also never really gave anything away. So all of that thought process of what was in there kind of was developed in our own heads and on the forums and Facebook and, you know, the talk. We kind of built our own hype of What's in the Shed. The park really never gave anything out, and then people had these unreasonable expectations of what was in the shed and were let down. Whereas I completely appreciate it because, one, it's extra theming that I wasn't expecting when getting on the ride. Two, you get different songs in there. You get a different animal or creature that comes out and attacks, and there's a lot going on in there. There's more animatronics going on there than what people think. If you watch the Coke machine, you look at the stuff blowing off the walls because of the sound and such. There's actually stuff falling down from the ceiling, HVAC piping that actually falls down a foot. There's a lot more going on in there. People kind of give it credit. They just see screens, and there's more in there than that. And the theming in there of different things and the black lights coming on and writing the stuff of what's in the shed, it's in the shed, and the radio playing. I personally love it. I really enjoy it. I know people had expectations that, you know, they wanted more animatronic stuff actually attacking you and, you know, stuff coming down at you. But I personally appreciate it. I love it because, one, I'm out of the sun. I'm not standing in a brake run out in the sun or rain or what have you. And I get entertained while I'm waiting for that train to be dispatched out of the station.
Yeah, it's definitely better than waiting for the racer in that tunnel.
Right.
The as far as the What's in the Shed theming itself, I would call it a success based on even how it's been parodied by Holiday World and Cedar Point now. It's definitely made an impression to park visitors and people who follow the industry, this type of marketing campaign of mystery. I think it really worked out well. There was a lot of interest in the ride. So overall, I would call the whole marketing campaign a success.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see what other attractions Kings Island does with this kind of theming and marketing built into it.
Right. Go ahead, Matthew.
I can't wait to see what Kings Dominion does with their Twisted Timbers, which is going to be loosely based on Mystic Timbers as far as the theming.
Yeah, I mean, you got What's in the Shed. They've definitely knocked it out with the park with more theming and storyline and a ride that we've never seen before at Kings Island. So I'm hoping they're going to keep up with that trend with more attractions in the future. So I'm really excited about what they can do next with more theming and backstory on the next attraction.
Yes.
I agree, yes.
And to kind of wrap up the Mystic Timbers conversation, it did win the Golden Ticket Award for Best New Ride in 2017.
Yes, absolutely.
Do either of you have anything else? Do you have anything else you want to add on Mystic Timbers?
I don't, Matthew.
I don't think so.
Okay, moving on. The other new addition that debuted during the summer was the Island Smokehouse in Soak City. I personally didn't get out to Soak City this year, so I'll have to rely on you guys to fill in the deliciousness of the food out there.
I ate there about 12 times, I would say.
I probably ate there 5 or 6 times at least, and quite honestly, I love the food there so much that, you know, it was either lunch or dinner was my trip over to Island Smokehouse over to Soak City. It was one of those lunch or dinner pretty much every visit. I wanted to go to Island Smokehouse and eat there because I enjoyed the food that much. What about you, Matthew?
I was definitely more than impressed with the food. It was lunch and dinner for me. So yes, the pulled pork and the beef briskets, those were both excellent.
I absolutely love the beef brisket. I love the shrimp as well. And I love the fries over there. I really like those type of fries that they offered over there. That was a big pull for me because it was different from any other place in the park.
They did the Sidewinder fries. Those who've been to Carowinds might recognize those from Harmony Hall. Those do have a unique seasoning and the shape is fun. So it's nice to have a different variety over there.
So, yeah, you had the mac and cheese. You had shrimp, beef brisket, pulled pork, and the chicken tenders, which I thought the chicken tenders over there were different from any other place in the park. I really enjoyed the chicken tenders over there as well. I would go over there. I mean, I do enjoy the ones at Chicken Shack as well, but they definitely had a different breading on the ones over at Island Smokehouse, which, you know, made it a nicer location to go and eat something a little bit different, even if it's, you know, chicken tenders that you can get in several other places in the park. It was different, a different type of chicken tender because it had different breading on it, which made it really cool to go over there and eat those and know that it's a different type of chicken tender than you're going to find in other parts of the park. And you also had the mac and cheese, which their mac and cheese, I really enjoy. I know my family went over there. You know, it's pretty good when you'll drag, I say drag, but that sounds kind of bad, but we'll bring 3 kids with you, so there's 5 of us. Get on the train, go over to Island Smokehouse. We're not going to the water park, and you got 3 kids who just want to go into the water park and play in the water rides. But we didn't bring, you know, bathing suits with us, so, you know, we had to make do with 3 kids wanting to go do water rides while they're over there at Soak City. But I would take the kids over there to enjoy Island Smokehouse, and the kids really loved it too. So if you got kids, take the train ride over there when they get a train ride, so you get one ride in, and two, you get great food over there.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the trip over.
It's definitely on my list of things to do this summer.
Yeah, you definitely need to get over there. Robbie, and eat the food over there.
And, other than food, one of my favorite parts of the Island Smokehouse was the spicy barbecue sauce, which lives up to its name. It's very spicy. So if you like spicy foods, get that. You may want to get it on the side because a little bit of it does go a long way.
Good suggestions.
All right. So moving right along through the season, we're down to Haunt 2017. I personally didn't go through any of the haunted attractions this year.
What about made it over there one time on opening day. I went and met up with the KI Central group that was over there, and we probably went through, what, 7 or 8 attractions that night, Matthew? And I took my son. He's 12. I know that the recommendation for children was, what, 13 to come to Haunt. If you're someone who has kids, and here's the reason I hadn't taken him in the past, is with the lights low, not very much visibility, which makes it more fun for Haunt, and the fog, I was always afraid, and Haunt is very busy. It's a very busy time of the season at Kings Island, so you got busy park, low visibility, and a lot of fog and low lights. I was afraid we were going to get separated. That was the only reason I hadn't taken him over there, and plus, I didn't know exactly how he was going to react to it. I didn't want to drive 2 hours for him to go to 2 attractions and decide he didn't want to be there anymore. So I wanted to make sure he was old enough that he would appreciate the Haunt attractions more than getting scared. But he really enjoyed it. So if you have younger ones, I would say 11, 12-year-olds can do Haunt. Just kind of gauge how your own child is going to react to those type of things and how they react to movies and such that you allow them to watch. But I would say, Haunt and all, it was a very successful year, and my son enjoyed going as a 12-year-old. I enjoyed it. I'm not one who really gets scared. You might startle me every once in a while, but I'm not going to jump and, you know, get emotional because someone jumps that at me. So for the Haunt mazes and stuff, I enjoy them, but I'm not one who really gets scared, you know, like some people do. What about you, Matthew?
It's really hard to startle me.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, I startled very easily. So as an adult, I sort of flip-flopped. So now it's hardly ever get startled. So the Haunt mazes really don't affect me as far as being scared, though I do enjoy the atmosphere. This season I did most of the Haunt mazes at least 2 or 3 times each. I was at Haunt 4 times this year. I did enjoy, I'm not sure if you got a chance to go through it, but Dance of the Macabre, the new scare zone they had under the Eiffel Tower.
I didn't.
What do you say, Brad?
I didn't get a chance to go through there.
It was pretty well done. I enjoyed that it was different from the typical scare zone, more focused on the theming than trying to scare you. The characters under there were dressed up and would interact with you, but would not scare you. So for someone who doesn't get scared, who doesn't enjoy the scare, I would definitely recommend getting to that scare zone, or it's called a scare zone, even though it's not really scary. But it is a nice themed area to go with some of the scenes. You can get your photo in front of it. So it's a nice area to walk through, meet one of the characters, get your picture, and enjoy the scenery.
Well, I forgot the name of that zone, but yes, I did go through that because I think we were all together. We went through there a couple times, especially some of the dining room scenes and such with everything out on the table. Again, we're talking about theming again and storyline, where they brought that in underneath the Eiffel Tower. They had the awesome lights hanging from the tower that were flickering that looked like old dining room tables you'd find in some mansion. That was a lot of fun to go look at those and see the theming. That's what I appreciate most probably about Haunt, because like you said, I don't scare very easy. I know you don't, Matthew. I might get startled every once in a while, but I'm not going to get scared. So I appreciate, you know, the scare actors in there, what they're doing, looking at the theming and how they have the houses designed, and that scare zone you were talking about is very well done, and I really enjoyed that as well. as 2017, I would say that was my favorite area of the park to walk through, because I walked through there several times.
Okay, any other things, comments on haunts? Again, I didn't really go up there. I went up there a couple times. I was just riding rides. I wasn't going through any of the haunts.
No, I don't think so.
All right, moving on to the triumphant return of Winterfest for its third incarnation. For those of you that don't know, Winterfest originally debuted at Kings Island in 1982 and ran through the 1992 season. And then it had a brief return in 2005 before coming back this season. I actually visited in the late 80s and early 90s as a young kid. And then in 2005, I think I made 3 or 4 visits. And then I made countless visits this year. Comparing it to 2005, I would say that this version was leaps and bounds way ahead, just in terms of the roaming live entertainment and the characters and the lights. It was just an amazing experience. And even though I went so many times, I still feel like I missed things and didn't get to see and do everything.
So I went 6 times, and I was able to see all of the shows at one point, but it was until the near the end of the 6th night that I finally completed the last show. So there's definitely a lot to see, a lot to do. This was my first ever Winterfest, so it was sort of a new experience for me. Though I found I and made more trips than haunts, so definitely a thumbs up for me.
I absolutely loved it. I had no idea what to expect because that was my first Winterfest experience. I never got there in 2005 and never got there at a Winterfest before that. But, you know, walking up to the park and seeing all those lights, especially after it got dark, was the best way to describe it was magical. You walk in, you see International Street, and then they have the lighting ceremony, which is very cool. They light up the Eiffel Tower with the tree.
The snow.
And the snow coming down on top of you. That just made it absolutely a great time. There was, I can't say anything negative about it at all. I keep racking my brain of what I didn't like, and there's nothing I didn't like. And one thing I noticed for me, and I went as an enthusiast, and I took my family, so I got kind of 2 experiences here. Even as just walking around by myself with Electric Sun and other KI Central members, and as walking around with 3 kids with us, the time flies by. I guess your normal Kings Island day, you're there 10 to 12 hours. And Winterfest, you've got, you know, 5 hours. That 5 hours feels like it passes in about an hour and a half. With or without kids. At least it did for me. I don't know about you guys.
I would agree with that.
Because there's just so much to look at, see, and do. Everywhere you turn, there was a character for you to meet and greet. There was all kind of shopping for you to do up and down International Street. There was food for you to get that we didn't experience any other time of the season in different areas. And we can talk about that in a minute, I think it's on your list. And then all the lights to look at and the live entertainment everywhere. And this is literally everywhere, different areas of the park. You're walking into some sort of entertainment going on, whether it's a cappella singing or an actual show going on right in the middle of the midway in front of International Showplace.
I believe there are 12 stages this year with live entertainment on them.
And then you also had several rides open.
Yes. So my favorite, or one of my favorite aspects of visiting Winterfest was that the park really upped its game in the non-ride aspects. You still have several rides available, but the park really, to make Winterfest a success, the park really needed to shine in areas other than rides, and they really pulled that off with the live entertainment and the theming and the overall park atmosphere and activities such as the sledding and the ice skating all came together very well. So I'm already looking forward to Winterfest this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even like the petting zoo over in Planet Snoopy, they had a live stage show over there, and it was themed to like the nativity scene, which was really kind of cool to see the singers and the animals, and just everywhere you turn, there was something going on. And like Brad said, it felt like before you knew it, it was 9 o'clock already, because there were shows starting every 30 minutes across the park.
Yeah, if you go on, just if you only visit one time, seeing all the all shows and all 12 stages is almost impossible. You pretty much need more than one night there if you really want to see everything.
Yes, because I mean, like I said earlier, there's live entertainment everywhere, and it was absolutely wonderful. All the shows were wonderful. The live entertainment around the park was great. You just wanted to sit there and listen to them for half an hour. And one thing I wanted to bring up was, you know, there wasn't a lot of rides to go on, but there was plenty enough to keep you busy the whole time you're there. That 5 hours flew by. By the time you got something to eat, you did some shopping, you took the kids to do cookies or some other activity, whether it's writing something down for Santa, doing letters, or going snow tubing over in Action Zone. The time flew by, and before he knew it, it was 8:39 o'clock, and you're going, okay, I better get this one last thing in before the park closes for the night.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my experience as well. Always, night would end sooner than you think, so I need to get back.
On the subject of food, did any of you do the decorating cookies with Mrs. Claus?
Took my kids to do that, and then Electric Sun took her nieces and nephews to do that as well. So we took two trips in there, and you know, a lot of people complain, "Oh my gosh, it's you know, what was it, $15? Was it 10 or 15
or 14? Might have been somewhere around there, yeah."
Right around there, but you look at that and go, oh my goodness. But there was four cookies that were the size of a plate
that
you were decorating. So, you know, with the size of the cookie and the amount of time that you get to do that, I mean, with my three kids, we were in there for over an hour decorating cookies. And it's not like we were going slow. You know, this is how much time it took you to decide what toppings you want on there, what color of frosting you wanted to put, what kind of decorations they want to put on top, because there's all kinds of different options for decorations. There was like a little area for you to put different toppings on, whether it was snowflakes or Christmas trees. So your kids had to go decide what they wanted to put on as far as toppings and sprinkles and that sort of thing, and what color frosting you would put on here. So it wasn't a grab a cookie, throw a little frosting on and you're done. It was a, I would say for most people, half hour to an hour experience to decorate cookies to do with your family. And that's what it's all about, is taking your family and having a good time with them and experiencing those different things that Kings Island had to offer at Winterfest. And our family had a great time doing that. And it was so worth the $15 for those four cookies. And when the kids got home, they had cookies for 2 days to eat, because we, you know, kind of portioned it out where, you know, they wanted dessert after a meal. You know, you get a portion of your cookie. So, you know, you can get a couple of days out of those cookies for desserts. So in my opinion, that was a great deal and great value for your money to have that experience with your kids and have something to take home.
Yeah, I personally didn't do it because my son was only a year old, but I heard several people that did do it say that, you know, $15 is well worth it for the size of the cookies and the time that they spent in there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not totally sure, you can poke your head in there in the queue and look at the counter that they have all the cookies in and see how big those things are. So it's not like you're getting a 3-inch round cookie that you're going to decorate. You're going to spend some time putting frosting on that cookie and decorating it. So it's not like a 10-minute long cookie decorating and you're going to eat it in two bites. You know, you're not going to eat that cookie in one sitting.
Yeah.
For most people. You know, you're going to get several sittings of eating that cookie as a family once you get home, and you're going to talk about the park. You're going to talk about the fun time you had at the park. And I think that's what they're going for, is, you know, enjoying the park and then talking about your experience at the park and what you want to do the next time you go. Because like Matthew said earlier, He went six times. I think I got over there five times, and I personally never got to all the shows. Now, when you're taking three kids, it's really hard to keep them all in track and get them all herded together and go to see different things. And the couple of days that we took them, it was very cold outside, so we couldn't stay outside in some of the outside shows as much with the kids. As adults, we could handle it a little bit more, but the shows they did have were totally well worth it. In the Fest House and the one up front, help me here, the theater.
Theater.
And so, you know, those two shows were excellent. My children loved them. I totally recommend, and hopefully they come back again next year for you to take your kid and watch those shows. They're going to love them.
Yes. And actually, one of the shows, Tinker's Toy Factory, has been performed at all three Winterfests. In 2005, it was known as Santa's Toy Factory, and it was in the Kings Island Theater, and it had a little bit more elaborate stage set. And then it was performed in 1992 as well. So that's one kind of cool tidbit.
Right.
At least one of the other stages that was used in the 2005 is at another Cedar Fair park. Is that correct?
Well, Tinker's Toy Factory was used at, I believe, all the parks that had Winterfest this year.
Okay, I thought it was used at California's Great America, but I didn't know if it was used elsewhere.
I think it was used at Carowinds and Worlds of Fun as well.
Gotcha. So what do you think of the success of Winterfest this year? In my personal opinion, I thought it was a great success. I know the last week it got really cold, and I don't know if they got the numbers they were hoping that week, but you know, they can't really say too much about what happens with the weather, and that's gonna, you know, deter people away when it's 2 degrees outside.
It was great weather almost every day until Christmas. After Christmas, we got that Arctic blast, which made it hard with Mystic Timbers or some of the rides, but
I will say, though, I was up there on the Thursday after Christmas with some fellow Coney Island employees, and it was honestly more crowded than I was anticipating it being, given how cold it was. I mean, it wasn't as busy as it was like opening night for Winterfest, but there were a decent amount of people up there, even with Mystic Timbers being closed all day.
Right, and even closing day, I thought it was fairly decently packed for it being, what was the temperature out that night?
It was 7 degrees that night with a wind chill of -5.
Yeah, and there was still quite a few people in the park, I thought, for that weather forecast. And like you said, no rides at all that night. It was too cold for rides to operate.
Operating, but Blue Blasters was the ride.
Right, Blue Blasters was the only ride operating that night. But there was still a decent amount of people in the park, which to me speaks for how well they've done Winterfest this year.
I did like that day how they did as many of the shows as possible, moving them into the Fest House and into Red's Hall of Fame Grill and other indoor spaces, since you can't really have actors outside at the wind chill of -5. Guests aren't going to want to stand outside and watch the show anyway. But moving it indoors it went as well as it could that night, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they did an excellent job of rearranging the evening on closing day. You know, they didn't have to do that. They could have said, threw their hands up and said, we're done. But they made it work. Even without the rides, they had, like you said, the people indoors entertaining the guys that were outside. You know, they were walking to the shops and still entertaining people as they were getting, you know, their last-minute fudge for the year and shopping done that they wanted to do. You know, it was still a magical time, even with it, you know, in sub-zero temperatures.
Yeah, I agree. I had a lot of fun that night. And I think everyone else from KIC did, too. We did the big meetup that night.
And one thing we really haven't touched on that much is 5 million lights. They were all over the place. And I was completely impressed with the number of lights and the decorations that they had out in the park.
I agree. I've been to Dollywood Smoky Mountain Christmas many times, and it felt like Kings Island had more lights, more spread out than what Dollywood has. Dollywood is nice because it has them on all the buildings, but Kings Island seemed to have it in almost every single tree, and every time you turn around, you're seeing more lights.
And on the buildings. You know, it wasn't just in trees or just slung anywhere. You know, they definitely put a lot of thought and and detail into all the locations. And as Winterfest went on, I was seeing more stuff. Now, maybe I just missed it from the last time I was there, but it seemed like as Winterfest was progressing, so was the lights and the decorations throughout the park.
Go ahead, Robbie.
Yeah, I did notice that from like opening night to when I went the first weekend in December, it did seem like there were more lights. And like, I love the lights that they had on top of the carousel building.
Yes, absolutely. And I just fell in love with the blue lights on International Street lighting up the buildings. I just couldn't take enough pictures of it. And you probably noticed that on the social media pages for Kings Island Central is I kept posting a lot of those pictures. And you could never take enough pictures of the Eiffel Tower either lit up as a Christmas tree. I mean,
yeah,
you get to a different part of the park. Oh, I got to take another picture of that. It looks really cool over here.
Another thing, too, is during the tree lighting ceremony, the LED lights and all the buildings on International Street were actually changing colors as they were counting down.
I noticed that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, photo ops all over the place. There were in the Coca-Cola Village, they had tons of Coca-Cola areas where you could take a picture, even one where the frame was upside down, so it would look like you were hanging out of a sled upside down. And just all over, there were Winterfest logos that you could have your picture taken.
You had the snow globe over an action zone, and you had the over the Santa and Diamondbacks gift shop. Santa was in there for photo opportunities.
And then Christmas Snoopy after Christmas was over. So you could still take a picture with Snoopy after that.
Yeah.
So that last week of operations, you could get a picture with Snoopy. So, you know, they were still utilizing the building and you still could get a picture as well. I loved all the different Coca-Cola signs that you could come up and take pictures with, like you mentioned a minute ago. I loved how Coney Mall was lit up. I absolutely loved that. The airplane that was taking off in the middle there was a very cool effect. And like you said, the lights on the buildings themselves, even down Coney Mall, you know, they didn't just do International Street and leave it at that. Even down Coney Mall and Rivertown, there was lights on all the buildings as well.
Yeah. And the other thing, with Winterfest 2005, you started seeing the Christmas decorations pop up like the first week in October. Mm-hmm. And while they did have some lights up on International Street, it wasn't quite as much as in 2005. And I was just impressed with how much they put up after Halloween Haunt ended and before Winterfest opened.
That was impressive. We definitely need to give a lot of thanks and praise to the team that did all that work, because they really worked their butts off and put out a wonderful event for all of us to enjoy.
And I think it's safe to say that all three of us are looking forward to going back to Winterfest at the end of this year.
And we have yet to touch on the food, the new food from Winterfest.
Yeah, let's touch on that just a minute. I absolutely loved the mac and cheese bar. I know Matthew loved it as well. We probably hit that almost like we would Island Smokehouse in the summertime of hitting that. Just like at least one meal. I think you did it two meals the last time I saw you, Matthew, over there. Getting the mac and cheese bar, and I'm hoping this is going to return during regular season, because I think it was a big enough hit that it would be great during regular season as well.
Yeah, I agree with
you. Did anyone try the cinnamon pull apart bread?
Yes.
We tried to go on closing day and it wasn't open, so I don't know if the, you know, just didn't have enough cinnamon bread, didn't think they were going to have enough attendance. But, yeah, it was closed on closing day, because that was one thing that we never got to up until closing day. But quite honestly, that was one of the reasons we drove over there, was to get that, and it wasn't open.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, but they likely ran out and didn't end up asking anyone. Though I did try it a couple times earlier in the season, and it was very good. Those who have been to Dollywood know that they are famous for their cinnamon bread, and Kings Island is close. Don't know if I would go as far as to say that it's better than Dollywood's, but it is very good, and it's not a bad value. It's only like $8 or $9, and it's a big enough loaf to feed a few people, so it's not a bad value, and it tastes very good. It's not healthy, but it's tastes very good.
Well, we also need to talk about the Beast Mug in the Sweet Spot building that was $10 for the mug you got to take home, and it had the Beast logo on the side. We got one of those closing day, and that hot chocolate was absolutely delicious. We got the one with the peanut butter on the rim, so it's got peanut butter on the rim. It had Oreo pieces on top, candy cane in it, and the hot chocolate, and man, it was so worth $10. Anyone else get one?
I did not.
Matthew, did you try one?
I did not end up trying one. I was planning to, but ran out of time on closing day.
I know those were a big hit as well with at least enthusiasts. I know we posted on social media and people were going, where'd you get that? We want one. So I know they were definitely a big hit, at least with the enthusiast groups. And I think they were a big hit with, you know, general park guests who came in as well. And as far as the food offerings, what food offerings did they have in the fest house? And, you know, Panda was open, but instead of your normal burgers and chicken tenders, they had the turkey meal. And I think there was a ham.
There was a ham one as well.
Ham or turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, green beans was in the fest house as well. So I enjoyed that offering as well, doing a holiday-themed dinner instead of just your normal hamburgers in there. I really enjoyed that, and I hope that returns next year as well.
Yes, and importantly, the meals at Winterfest are on the dining plan. So for those of you who buy the dining plan, you can eat all season from April through December. So it makes the dining plan even better value.
Yeah, I bought a dining plan for the first time for this year, for me and my wife.
Yeah, it's worth it. And just knowing meals are taken care of when you walk into the park, to me, is almost worth the money right there. You're not going to have to worry about your meals. You just got to get in line and get it. And for Winterfest, the mac and cheese bar was really worth it. I really enjoyed the mac and cheese bar.
That was, if I had to say my favorite food of the year, Island Smokehouse or mac and cheese bar, it would be a tough decision because they're both that good.
I would have to lean towards the mac and cheese bar just because it's, you can do it, you can mix it up. You know, you go to Island Smokehouse, you got several options. Mac and cheese bar, you know, you probably got 100 different meals you can make. You know, I'm not going to know the exact numbers. Maybe Chef Nathan can chime in and see how many different meals you can make out of the mac and cheese bar there. But, man, there's different meat options, side items you can throw on top that, you know, you can make it your own and totally change it up the next time, and it tastes totally different.
And at this mac and cheese bar, you did have the smokehouse brisket and the smokehouse pulled pork as options. So for those who do enjoy the smokehouse, that was nice to have those options to add to your mac and cheese at Winterfest.
And they had meatballs as well, which my kids really liked. They both got the meatballs on their mac and cheese each time, and they really enjoyed it. And you can get chicken bites. I think they call it chicken bites. It's little bitty chicken tenders you could throw on there as well. I never tried that, but that was a really cool option as well.
For me, it was alternating between the pulled pork and the brisket because both of those were so good, I didn't venture to try anything else.
I got the beef brisket every single time. Once I tried it, I went, ooh, that's really good. So I always enjoyed getting that. And you can put the different type of mac and cheese. You can get the white cheddar, this normal yellow cheddar cheese on it, or you can put the Alfredo sauce on there as well. Lots of options, and I really enjoyed it. And you can put veggies on top and try to make it at least somewhat healthy for you.
And fried onions you could add on top that were really good.
Yes, I absolutely love the fried onions on top. That added it for me. I love the fried onions and that.
They're caramelized onions, I believe.
Yeah, caramelized onions, but they're fried up and all, and I absolutely love those.
And the white mac and cheese is my favorite. The standard mac and cheese is good, but the white mac and cheese really next level for me.
I enjoyed both, but I always got the yellow. And you can also get a pesto sauce on it as well, too. So you can add a pesto sauce, which Electric Sun got quite a bit each time she ate there, and she absolutely loved it.
Yes, I always got that as well. I would do the white mac and cheese with either pulled pork or brisket, barbecue sauce, caramelized onions, pesto and Parmesan cheese. That was my dish.
Needless to say, as long as we've been talking about it, we were impressed with the mac and cheese bar. We hope it stays.
So that pretty much covers Winterfest. Obviously, you can tell we enjoyed Winterfest and can't wait to go back, but we don't want to rush through the season.
Right.
Do you guys have any parting comments on Winterfest before we start to wrap things up tonight?
Well, I can just say that you guys delivered. You hit it out of the park. Keep it up.
Yeah, I can't come up with any real suggestions. It was so good this year. Can't wait to see what happens next or what happens this year.
Yeah, I guess we are. And this year, aren't we?
We're in 2018 now.
New season starting here in a couple months.
Yep, they just announced that opening day is April 14th.
April 14th, put it on your calendars. We got a meetup started on KI Central. Go over there and get your name up there so we know you're going to meet up with us. And you don't actually have to, you know, meet up with us and walk with us all day long, but, you know, we do have a meetup at a time where we take a picture. You're welcome just to join that, take a picture with us, and get to meet some of the crew and people on the Kings Island Central website. And it's always nice to come put a name with a screen name and a face with a screen name. I always find it difficult to be able to remember people's names or screen name and what they look like. That's just so difficult for me. So it's taken years to be able to get there, but this is a great opportunity at a meetup to come meet some of us, find out who we are, and, you know, take a ride or two on Mystic Timbers or Beast.
And if you do come alone and need a ride partner, coming to a meetup is a great way to meet people who you can ride with. So
we're looking forward to a great 2018 season. Keep a lookout on KICentral.com for meetups and different stuff. We are doing some off-season meetups here in a couple weeks in February. So, you know, if you want to join us there as well, we'll be doing different activities outside in the off-season to help get the off-season over with so we can get back to the park.
Yes. Short off season this year, which is nice since we're used to this 5-month off season. And now we're season just ended and we're already going to be back in the park in a couple of months. So
We really only got a three and a half months total, you know, once Winterfest ends and 2018 begins.
Well, I think we've about covered the 2017 season at Kings Island, which also means I think we've concluded the end of the first Kings Island Central podcast.
Okie dokie. Well, it's been a great time talking with everybody, and we'll see you next time.
For more discussion on this podcast, please visit kingsislandcentral.com. On behalf of myself and Matthew Middleton and Brad Perdue, thank you for listening to the inaugural episode of the Kings Island Central podcast. This is your host, Robbie Zerhuizen, signing off. And remember, you don't stop playing because you grow old. You grow old because you stop playing.
Thank you for listening to the Kings Island Central podcast. KICentral.com is Kings Island's ultimate fan site. For more discussion about Kings Island and other amusement parks, join us over at KICentral.com.